We will never forget this. Hopefully with joy in our hearts. 9 seconds left. Eagles by 8. Brady lines them up. He's back again. He steps up. He's hit. He stumbles. He is throwing it deep for the end zone, and it is batted around and incomplete. And the game is over. The game is over. The Philadelphia Eagles are Super Bowl champions. Eagles fans everywhere, this is for you. Let the celebration begin.
The Around the NFL podcast does not advertise on other podcasts.
Welcome back to a very special edition of the Around the NFL podcast from US Bank Stadium, Super Bowl 52. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a stadium filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Oh, hey.
Nondescript afternoon here.
Oh, yeah. That was, of course, Merrill Reese and Mike Quick with the call.
It's 12:45 in the morning. This is no afternoon, my friend.
I feel like we've been here for 3 years, but you're right. Yeah.
That was the final call of Super Bowl 52, the Philadelphia Eagles. For the first time in their franchise history, our Super Bowl champions, a 41-33 win over the New England Patriots in one of the greatest shootouts. Greg, and how you doing, by the way, Greg?
I'm doing good.
Okay.
It's actually much nicer to cover the game professionally and just be busy and kind of be here live. If you're at home, I would be miserable.
What I was going to say was, in one of the not just greatest shootouts in Super Bowl history or playoff history, but professional football history, a game where defenses did not show up to play until one of the defenses made a play that helped seal the game.
This is a rollicking game. It's like a 7-on-7 drill for both teams.
We were on Sky Sports, Wes and I, and the first thing they were asking, like, how do you assess this performance? Just back and forth, ping pong. And to me, it was like two drunk cousins playing Madden and like literally scrapping any element of defense.
It's like no punting.
No, I mean, yeah. There was literally no punt by the Patriots the entire game. There were so many oddities about this game. It was incredible.
There was not a stop in the second half other than the Brandon Graham forced fumble. Every other possession and the end of the game that the Patriots couldn't come up with, every other possession was a touchdown. And in a game where there was so little separating these two teams because the offenses just absolutely embarrassed both of the defenses overall, there were just little kind of game management moments where the Eagles were better. The Eagles closed out the first half with a touchdown, which has kind of been the Patriots' move. The Patriots gave away more points on special teams than the Eagles, who had their own problems on special teams as well. But the Patriots are the ones that gave away more points. And on like third and fourth down, a lot of the plays Nick Foles made were just money plays. Maybe that's why it's not hitting me as hard right now, because I honestly think like he just made those plays and the receivers made those plays. It took incredible plays on drive after drive and third down and fourth down after fourth down for them to come out on top.
Yeah.
The
mistakes from the Patriots end, Brady drops the pass when he goes out as a wide receiver on third down. He scrambles ill-advisedly at the end of the half, taking away a chance maybe for a field goal drive.
The end of the first half, yeah.
Yeah, Chris Hogan drops a pass late in the game. Brandon Cook's lack of peripheral vision knocked him out of the game because he didn't see Malcolm Jenkins coming. That you have to be able to see that player coming.
There were mistakes all over. On the flip side, the Eagles sort of had done what they'd done all year. Incredibly daring do, going forward on fourth and one at one point, which didn't even seem that unusual for them because that's who they are this year. And just, I thought that they pushed New England's defense around.
Did you say daring do?
A little bit of daring do. A little bit of that. It's like it's 12:46. New words are coming out, old phrases. No,
listen, the Patriots didn't execute the way you would expect in this game. And even at the end of the game, and we'll get to it, when everyone and their brother and their sister believed that Tom Brady was going to just lead him down the field, and it didn't happen. But Nick Foles, to me, is the story of this game beyond anything else. Nick Foles, who was
positively mundane in each of his first or many of his starts to start after he replaced Carson Wentz. He played well against the Giants, and then they kind of went in the tank for 3 weeks, and he was okay to good, depending what you think, in the Falcons game, and then lights out in the NFC title game, and then a Super Bowl performance, and he was awarded with an MVP. Oh, I didn't see a car as we looked down on the field. I guess they don't give away a car to the MVP anymore.
I mean, he's going to be able to have a car, use of a car if he needs
Nick
something.
Foles, what he did these past 3 weeks in these
Uber
two games
around.
Was remarkable. Like, he played, I wouldn't say he was better than Tom Brady today, because Brady was tremendous, as he always is on the stage, but he went punch for punch with the greatest quarterback ever. Who saw that coming?
When I talked to John DeFilippo, the quarterback coach for the Eagles, and this was off the record, but at the end of the conversation, I was just basically, he talked a little bit about Foles. He's like, Foles is such a high character guy. We love Nick Foles. He's just such a guy that everyone believes in, and so that's great, the person, but then he said, no, the player. He said, this team is totally bought into what Nick Foles had done over the past couple weeks. He said, we are going to beat New England. He was ultra confident. And this Eagles team all week long expressed total confidence in their quarterback and in themselves. It nearly became the first Super Bowl in history with zero sacks.
I mean, it's one of the...
You had to wait till the last 3 minutes for that to happen, and it changed this game.
It's one of the best quarterback performances in a Super Bowl, period. You don't need qualifier that it was Nick Foles or and Tom Brady was great in this game too. I'm sure there's some plays he would take back, but he had 505 yards against a great defense, so that's not the point. The point is he had low percentage throws, Nick Foles did. I mean, throws that were not easy. I'm thinking about the play to Aguilar on their final drive where he's on the run. There's a couple different plays where he threw it on a dime on the sideline. Think about the touchdown passes. The throw to Jeffrey was a very difficult throw. The throw to Clement, which I think is, I mean, there's so many big plays.
Beautiful.
But that's a play that's on 3rd and 6. It's a turkey hole shot, as John Gruden would say. The safety's coming over. You need to have basically every skill that a quarterback needs to have is on that throw, and he puts it right on the money, and his receivers came through and made great plays for him.
They did, and I thought it was a little bit of psychological warfare after Brady wide open dropped that pass that we mentioned, that you turn around and have Nick Foles score on a receiving, that he caught a touchdown.
Yeah, he was out of his mind in this game. He showed up to play. I think The Eagles, they deserve so much credit. An underdog 3 weeks in a row in the playoffs. And I was speaking to a sparrow at our beautiful hotel. And by the way, we crushed the over at TGI Fridays.
It was close, but then Friday turned into Saturday, and the contest was left in tatters.
We had a terrific meetup with our listeners. Thanks to everyone that
was
came
awesome.
By. And I think, you know, the numbers, when you look at the box score, it won't say that I had, you know, necessarily a huge impact, but
you were basically Malcolm Butler.
But I think, that's not true. I think
that would hurt, Greg.
The emotional lift that I gave the team on Friday night, because frankly, I put in more hours at that tweet up than anybody else from beginning to end, carrying one unnamed person out of the bar. I'm saying I was there, and I'm just saying
this narrative is
the inspiration that I gave everyone from beginning to end.
It was definitely a quantity over quality scenario for you, Greg, but we do appreciate your lengthy
stay. And like
stay.
Malcolm Butler, who no-showed Sunday, Greg no-showed Saturday night. So it all evened out.
I didn't know Saturday night was a second part of it.
No,
we had Patriots friends from all over Wilbraham, Massachusetts, Minichog Regional. We're out to dinner.
Where would you rather be than TGI Fridays in the world?
Mixed with your glory, there was certainly an aspect of heel turn to, you know, we were there quietly working on this over all week. And you kind of just left us hanging, and then swooped in when the party was happening, and we get it.
I said the over under the second it went up. I said, "There's no problem. That thing's going over."
You you had a little bit of blood in your hands at the over under too, Mark.
In what way?
A little bit of a late arrival. Some people were grumbling behind.
No,
the scenes.
Here's the thing. I showed up on time. I had a good friend, and you met him
to
last
the meetup.
Night. He brought his baby to the meetup and realized that the scene was a bit too chaotic for a baby. So I spent some quality time with him and his family. And then he returned last night to help with the over.
What I was going to say was, thank you, everybody that came out. It was great. We even met a dude that's 7'3". That is awesome. Just to get a 7-footer in your fan base, that's big.
At one point, him standing next to like a much shorter Patriots fan, and not Greg. It's separate, a different person. So
one of the other people that we converse with around the NFL football cognoscenti, a sparrow, I'll call him, told me that a prominent figure within the Eagles expressed total confidence that the Eagles would put up 40 on the Patriots, and they did just that. This team was confident going into this game, and they played that way. So let's now kind of go through the game quarter by quarter. Maybe we'll touch on JT's halftime show as well, and we'll catch up on our props, Super Bowl props that we made, how we all did. But let's start with the first quarter, and the Patriots win the toss. They elect to receive in the second half, as they like to do. But the Eagles, right away, Wes, did exactly what they wanted to do, and they probably would have, if they did anything not perfectly on offenses, Brady was on the field a lot and scoring every time. They didn't have a lot of clock-chewing drives except for the first one and their last one, or their second-to-last one. The first drive was a great drive. It stalled at the goal line, but 7 minutes of the clock, they get a wild Eagles crowd right into the game with a nice scoring drive.
Well, let's go back to Malcolm Butler again, because this is the big mystery of the game. And the Eagles came out and immediately attacked Eric Rowe. And Jordan Richards and Jonathan Batamosi. Malcolm Butler doesn't play a single snap. He played more snaps than any defensive player on the Patriots this season. Nobody can figure out exactly why he didn't play. There were some illness issues during the week, but that showed up on the very first drive of the game.
Yeah, for some backstory, he took a Patriots private plane by himself, or a plane by himself, and got to the team later in the week, which now you look back at and you wonder what was going on.
Yeah.
With that. They said he was sick, but he did wind up practicing later in the week. And I think, you know, if we're going to talk about Butler now, probably the most telling quote after the game was Eric Rowe was asked about it, and he said, you know, was that the plan? You know, did you expect to replace Malcolm Butler? And he said, that wasn't the plan.
Well, and another telling quote...
I think he doesn't know what to say.
Right, yeah. Another telling quote was Malcolm Butler after the game saying that the team gave up on him.
There's a quote. So, they gave up on me. F. That's the F word. It is what it is. So that is going to... And I know Erica Tamposi, the loose cannon, who's very emotional. She's a huge Patriots fan, upset about the outcome. I think there are a lot of people like Erica that right now are dealing with anger that... How did our defense get completely butchered in this game? And arguably, our top cornerback or our top two cornerback was benched for something that might maybe not the right time for that. We don't know what the true story is, but Belichick moves in mysterious ways.
Doesn't sound peaceful, though.
It's really interesting because I think back to the AFC Championship game a year ago, and I remember coming out of that locker room and asking another reporter, what was up with Malcolm Butler? Because he kind of seemed... not that thrilled that they won the game, or just he had a strange vibe about him. And, you know, the reporter had said to me that's kind of been his deal all season. And that was a season ago where he wasn't happy necessarily with the team. I don't know what was going on, but there was drama going on behind the scenes. And this guy, who I have said on this podcast many times, is my favorite Patriots player of the last decade. It is sad to see kind of like, one of the author of one of the great Super Bowl moments ever, one of the great underdogs ever, to have kind of this as the bookend for his Patriots career. It's pretty sad.
Crazy. So they kick a field goal. The Patriots go right down the field. They kick a field goal. And then the first touchdown on the game comes on a bang, bang, bang. And again, what is going on with the Patriots defense right out of the gate? Three plays, 77 yards. Nick Foles in his first big money throw of the game spots Alshon Jeffrey, who had a nice first season in Philly, didn't he?
Foles under center. Smith in motion. On first down, Foles fakes. He's back. He steps up. He is going deep. And it is caught by Alshon Jeffrey for a touchdown.
So Jeffrey makes the 34-yard touchdown catch. The extra point is no good. It goes wide right. So the first quarter ends with the Eagles up 9-3.
That reminds me of two play sequences in the first half where the Eagles hit him for big gains on back-to-back plays. And that was one of them. I mean, you hit him for 36 on a run, then you hit him, what was it, for 34 on a pass, something like that. And they did it again in a later drive. And it was like the play calling by Peter Olsen. It was like they were throwing combination punches. And the Patriots were always guessing wrong and kind of playing behind. And they would hit him with these two straight. You just don't see that. You know, that's not bend but don't break. That's just, you're just broken.
you were asking a lot from this offense to come out and make big play after big play, and right away you could tell that everyone was on the same page. The Eagles on third down were unbelievable, extending drives over and over, and they were the farthest thing from conservative, and they were the more balanced offense, I thought, out of the gate because they could run the ball well. LeGarrette Blount and crew really had their way with New England. There were some huge holes they were running through. So right away, Foles had two big third down throws on that first drive, and you could tell they were on.
So 9-3, the Pats miss a field goal, and it comes on a bad snap. They get deep in territory again. So the Patriots never had trouble moving the ball. Their quarterback threw for 500 yards. My God, Tom Brady. There's no such thing as a record book anymore for quarterbacks in the playoffs and in the Super Bowl. No. He has just put so much distance between himself and everyone. But they go straight down the field. And again, this is not the Patriots that we expect at this level. Bad snap. Gostkowski gets in a tough spot where he has to stutter, and then he hits the upright with the kick, and there it is, Greg. I mean, that's that again. Is a Pats fan, I'm sure you're feeling like, oh, I can't leave points on the board with the way my defense looks right now.
Yeah, they ended up giving away 4 points on special teams, three there with the bad snap.
You could say 7-2 when they eschewed a 52-yard field goal to throw a deep ball to Gronk down the sideline. That's another missed 3 points.
In that moment, which Dan and I had a great view of, because our friends at Sky Sports welcomed all four of us down in two different segments, and we were down there for that missed field goal, which had a great view of that miss. You know, we need to get our seats down there. That's what I was thinking.
Well, that was the big takeaway.
But it was beautiful to be as part of their podcast. The play before that, though, was one of the big defensive plays in the game. Rodney McLeod takes down Brandon Cooks one-on-one. Cooks has got to, make him miss.
Yes,
instead,
he
tries to jump over him, and that takes maybe 7 points off the board. And even though the Eagles' defense was terrible, really, overall in this game, they did make three or four plays. And it's like sometimes that's what it comes down to. Their individuals, including McLeod on that play, made a couple big-time plays, and that was one of them.
The Eagles then get on the board again, a LeGarrette Blount 21-yard touchdown run. They go for two at this point. I thought that was an interesting move at the time. It seemed maybe early. They were at 15-3. They fail again. The one thing the Eagles failed on offense in this game was two-point conversions. They failed twice in addition to missing an extra point.
I know, and I called the missed extra point, and I had said that that was going to be the difference in a one-point Patriots win. And at one point, it was 33-32 in the fourth quarter with a mixed extra point on the board.
So far, would you say, Greg, that I am being a class act so far? Like, some people would think I'd come on and be gloating. So far, total pro.
Very classy, I would
say. It's been a fine day for all of that, yes. You're a classy guy.
15-6 now.
A lot of backslapping on this episode.
And you're thinking to yourself, oh boy, are the Patriots about to fall into a deep hole? But it never really happened that way. 15-6. After this point, it's kind of a back-and-forth affair. James White scores a rushing touchdown. And then the Eagles score again. They can't get a stop. And it happens in a very interesting way. Let me go back first and say this. There was a huge play, and we've referenced it twice, with Tom Brady, with the Patriots, and Josh McDaniels, and maybe his last game. Maybe. We'll see. There's a report out there that McDaniels might not be ready to move on, and which would leave the Colts in a very bad way. But a huge play in which Tom Brady was the intended receiver, and we have not heard from our boy Scotty Zolak yet. Let's listen to the play in the second quarter in which Tom Brady had a chance to score a touchdown with his legs in his hands.
Snap to Brady. Again to James White. Pitches it back to Danny Amendola. He throws a lob to Brady. Off his hands. Incomplete. The Patriots pull out a play from the 2015 game against the Eagles. Amendola throwing it to Brady.
We didn't hear Zolak. He was just about to say something.
I think
something.
He was probably, Zolak probably was next level.
He didn't speak for the next 5 minutes,
right.
Actually.
I've heard some, inside info that Zolak very quiet in this game at certain stretches, certainly their extent. So the Patriots are unable to come through there. I think he's going in. I think he makes a couple guys miss.
I don't know about that.
He wasn't going.
He's out of bounds
close.
Like 2 feet later. If he
I think Brady thing. Cost him six on the play.
But this was an arena. I used to cover the Arena League for like 1 month when I worked
Greg.
at Roto-World. And Arena League games is all about getting like your two stops. And there really were only like two stops by the Eagles all game. And so this miss ended up feeling like a huge mistake because it was one of those two stops.
You say Arena Ball, I say Rocky IV. It's like there's no defense. Rocky's just like holding Drago with his left hand and punching him the whole time, and Drago's doing the same to Rocky. That's what this football game was.
Yeah, so the Patriots miss an opportunity. Whether or not you think he's going to make some moves and get in the end zone, it's probably a 25-yard gain. Calm down. Maybe he doesn't score a touchdown. The Patriots are set
right
up.
He's going right out
there.
Of bounds after he
did catches
the ball.
Did you miss the scramble play when he had a 10-yard head start on Brandon Graham and he tracked him down within a split second?
I think he's got some quick twitch. Because of all the elastic bands. Anyway, so now, Brady doesn't get it done with his hands. However, there's another quarterback. This, to me, was kind of the biggest play of the game on some level, or at least at this stage. Greg, you wrote about it afterward, and it's up on NFL.com/Rosenthal. The Eagles doing what other teams had failed to do against the Patriots in the big money spots. And this came on a fourth down. It was a long one, almost 2 yards, late in the first half, and the Eagles take out their bag of tricks to score another touchdown.
Boom. Moves to the right. It goes directly to Clement. Clement reverses it, and the pass goes into the end zone.
To Nick
and
Foles.
It's a touchdown by Nick Foles.
Listen, a little razzle-dazzle by Doug Peterson.
I mean, that's a painful thing to listen to for me for many reasons, but one of which is Trey Burton threw that touchdown pass.
Yeah, you got to get that right. But that was, Greg, Walla Walla onion hanger right there to do a trick play. Because at 3-point lead right there, I like that they went for it, but then they also said, we love our playbook, and we're going to take one and stick it to Billy Boy.
And they did. That play was called Philly Special.
Today I'm going to show you a little bit about growing huge onions.
and it took onions, and it took planning. It was a play they actually had in for the Minnesota game. So it's not like he suddenly saw Tom Brady drop a pass, and they're like, ooh, I really want to stick it to the Patriots.
Well, I like that narrative better.
That's what it was, actually.
By just like creating this play to, you know, mock them almost. It was a play they almost called against Minnesota. He says they stole it, essentially, from the Bears, who ran it on Alshon Jeffrey's team a year ago. It worked for the Bears then. It worked for the Eagles here. And the most surprising thing I heard, I think, after the game about it was Burton saying, oh, when we do that in practice, you can throw the ball anywhere to Nick Foles because Nick Foles is so athletic. He'll catch it. Doesn't matter if he's covered or if not. He's going to make that play. And I'm like, really? Nick Foles is Jerry Rice out there?
You had a great tweet about that. I mean, it was a killer turn of events for New England because when New England scored James White's 26-yard run to go essentially put them down 15-12. And I turned to Wes and Greg and said, New England's winning this game.
Yes,
I
you just, did.
I have a pretty good record when I do that. I was way off base this time.
Although you also said they scored too early.
They scored too early because you gave the Eagles a little over 2 minutes, and the way these teams were both moving the ball, that's way too much time. And so to go cap off the first half with that, to go up 10 right before the half, I thought that was an absolute killer turn of events for New England.
That was maybe the ballsiest Super Bowl call since Sean Payton's onside kick to start the third quarter in the Saints Super Bowl victory. And I can't say enough good things about this offensive coaching staff. Their creative play design, their timely play calling, and God, I hope as much as teams copycat against teams that win the Super Bowl, I hope so many more coaches become aggressive on fourth down in key situations like Doug Peterson has been all year. Even with his own announcers questioning him on it.
And you're right. Like, that was maybe not even the gutsiest fourth down call or call that Peterson made in the game. I mean
if you factor
right,
in the trick play nature of it.
Yeah, no, the whole thing is crazy. I love that. And he said that throughout the week. His players all said that after the game, that pregame, throughout the week, Frank Reich, his coach, said, we're going to be aggressive, whether we're ahead, whether we're behind, just expect it for 60 minutes. That's how we roll.
So that made it 22-12. And even better, it happened so late in the quarter that the Patriots were not able to do the thing they love to do, which is they love to bang you with a score right at the end of the half, then get the ball back, and then score again. And it's a move I do in Madden all the time. I think I learned it from Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick.
Or they learned it from you, potentially.
No, but that's cool, too. I like that idea. So anyway, we're at halftime. Justin Timberlake comes out. I like to call it And I got to be careful with my words because Tamposi's already on edge a little bit. She's on tilt.
Mm.
But I enjoyed the show. She's looking at me right now. I enjoyed the show. I thought it was workmanlike. He did a 11-song medley. I do have one hot take about it, but I want to hear your guys' thoughts about Timberlake at half.
Well, I mean, I came in with very little expectations because a lot of times these halftime shows, you watch them and they look a little disheveled from the stadium itself, or at least where we're seated. Then you see it on television and it's a completely different experience. Yeah. I found out quickly that we had the reverse because I thought it was fantastic here, and I tweeted about I thought Erica would have loved it, and immediately start getting peppered with tweets. I don't know what you watched, but that is not what I saw at home, and I guess there were some technical issues, so maybe on TV it didn't play this well. I thought he knocked it out of the park from where we were.
I mean, I don't think I'm the target audience, but I couldn't.
Wes, I was next to Wes. Wes was doing football stuff. He was being a good football writer, not really paying attention.
I could not have been more bored by the performance. Which I think you accurately described as workmanlike, which is not what I'm looking for in a Super Bowl halftime show.
I feel like I have so many hot takes on the rest of the game that I should just leave the floor to you.
How am I the one defending the halftime show? I find that's probably the first time this has ever happened.
I thought it was a good show, and I have my fire take is that everybody calm down with their big think pieces that are coming tomorrow about how Timberlake somehow disrespected Prince by honoring him in Minnesota, where the dude was from. It's like, how dare you use a hologram? First of all, you know, grow up, Peter Pan. Know what it is. It's not a hologram. It was a projection, okay? So they did a projection that I thought was artfully done, and it called back to Prince's own legendary halftime performance. But everybody needs something to get fired up about on their little hot take machine.
Nobody's happy unless they're offended.
And then it's like, we already have the Janet thing in the holster and we're ready to do that. But let's get on them about honoring Prince. Is that where we are, society?
Weren't we expecting that to happen?
We don't. Yes. So we didn't want Prince honored in Minnesota? That's what you wanted?
Well, apparently Prince had, you know, thrown some notable shade at JT, was not a fan of him throughout his career, and so the Prince fans, they got up in arms.
So JT took the high road.
No, here's my other hot take. If Beyonce did the same thing, everybody would have been like, genius. She's done it again. All right, that's the end of the halftime hot takes. We moved to the third quarter, and I thought it was very notable. We're talking at halftime. Before JT, I think, Greg, you and I remarked, where's Gronk in the first half? And clearly, it's a 1950s football movie, and they got the big chalkboard, and it's just like throw to Gronk all the time. Right. Because the Patriots get the ball, they go right down the field, and they do this on the final play.
Brady with his left foot forward surveys the defense, and he takes the snap from the gun. He backs up. He throws to the middle of the end zone. Touchdown, Gronkowski! And the Patriots strike first in the second half of Super Bowl 52.
The unstoppable Rebel force is back.
8 plays. Zolak, of course. 8 plays, 75 yards, 2 minutes, 45 seconds, Greg. And at that point, I'm thinking to myself, if they just throw it to Gronk every time, there's no way they'll lose the game because he was unstoppable on that drive.
I mean, he ended up with 116 yards, and he was their third leading receiver, which is ridiculous on its own. This is a game, and that drive reminded me of it, that, you know, I'm never a big believer in momentum in general, but this is a game where you can absolutely say there's no momentum going on either way, because every time the Patriots scored one of these, I'm like, ooh, like...
You're one of those people who don't believe momentum exists?
I mean, I think there's
momentum
something
truther?
To it, but basically, every time the Patriots scored...
Got your head in too many analytics books.
Every time the Patriots scored, you're thinking, okay, here we go, and then immediately the Eagles respond, and then immediately the Patriots respond, and then immediately the Eagles respond.
Well, I think you started to go away from the momentum argument to realize both of these defenses are hideous tonight. They are ultra-awful this evening.
It was shocking that the Eagles couldn't rush Brady at all, especially
Let's talk about that for a second,
game.
Because that is what, in 2 weeks of hype... And we had conversations about it. Greg, you were steadfast about it, and it turns out you were right if you judge this game specifically, that as good as the Patriots did in terms of limiting points during the season, they were still, especially in the last 12 weeks or so, they were still a team where you could move the ball on them, and they were helped a lot by how great the offense was and how often they had the ball. So you kind of... I wasn't, I guess, stunned. Well, 40 points maybe is pretty extreme, but wasn't stunned that the Eagles moved the ball. But the Eagles on defense, where was the push? Where was this fearsome pass rush?
Didn't happen until the 2-minute drill.
Right.
Well, that was one play.
Yep.
Now they rushed him I think three straight plays on the last time the Patriots had the ball, and I think they ended up hitting him more times than any team's hit him all year. But it all happened late in the game.
I was downstairs with the Eagles after, and Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Derek Barnett, every one of them said, here's what we said on the sideline. It's going to take maybe the entire game, but we're going to get to him at some point. We have to come up with that one play. Because the way this thing was going, whoever made the mistake was going to lose. And that's what they said. That we'd have to make the Patriots get them into a situation where Brady, who has to take too long to pass on one snap, we take him down. It's exactly what happened.
It was surprising to see the Patriots' offensive line win that battle against Philadelphia. I think it was. I would assume they were pretty disappointed by the performance overall. I would have never expected that.
They are the first team in NFL history, regular season or postseason, to win a game when they gave up 600 yards.
Amazing. I mean, later in the game when the Patriots finally had taken the lead, I thought they were done at that point because it was like. That was the story of the game.
You said you pulled me over at that point. And you were like, hey, "I'm going to tell you how this goes." The Patriots pull it away. They're pulling away in this game. This was 6 minutes left. He's like, "It's going to end up not being that close."
But you should know me well enough by now. But that was a little bit
tweaker, 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 tweaker.
And Greg made a face like, "No."
I never felt good about this game.
So this is when the game kind of morphs into, and it did. I did remark to Greg as well. We were sitting not next to each other, but close to each other. Greg, not on my lap as my original request was for this game. But it started to feel like at a certain point, like that great Cardinals-Packers shootout a few years ago in the playoffs, where nobody could stop anyone. And I don't know, are you guys a fan of this type of game, like the crazy shootout? Because I kind of like the more tense affair where it's a little more defensive minded, not no points, but I was a little annoyed by the defenses after a while.
I would typically not want this all the time. I feel like there's all this emphasis on nonstop offense. I love the occasional strange like 7-6 game that feels shot out of a cannon from 5 decades ago. But tonight I enjoyed it because what we saw, and look, had Brady ever pulled this out, it would have been another example of total magical artistry. But instead we got it from both quarterbacks. So it was perfect for a Super Bowl, in my opinion.
I mean, it was a reminder. It's obvious. It's a quarterback. It's a passing. It's an offensive league. I mean, if ever there was a sign of it, it's this game. Defense is secondary.
It was action-packed, and if you like big plays and momentum swings and one team answering the other one, that was fun. You'd like to see better situational football. One team got clearly out-coached by the other because the Patriots were mistake-ridden for the entire game.
You're dead right.
I'd take a Seahawks-Patriots Super Bowl. Like, that was, you know, there's enough offense, enough defense, and the good guys won.
Yeah, I like those Giants-Patriots Super Bowls, personally. Anyway, so Gronk scores, and then it just becomes an Arena League game. The Eagles go 11 plays, 85 yards in 5 minutes. Corey Clement, that is the turkey ball, right? The turkey shot?
That was beautiful.
That was threading the needle, yeah.
And we should touch on this, because I think you had a good point on this, Greg. It seems like after the Jesse James touchdown was taken away in Pittsburgh, that helped give New England home field advantage in the playoffs, that even though it's not allowed and it would be maybe not something that they would ever admit to, but it feels like the catch rule shifted because that catch by Clement, and it was a catch, come on, let's calm down here, but that probably, under the letter of the law in the early River Ron era, is probably coming back, right?
There were a couple moments, and I think we heard on Roger Goodell's press conference on last Wednesday during the week, that they want to start over from scratch with the catch rule. And that almost got the sense that it's already been sent out that we don't want any more crazy overturns. And if nothing else, it would have been crazy to overturn either of the Eagles' touchdowns. It was ridiculous that they even reviewed the Ertz one that long.
Do the reviews seem 10 times longer when you're in the stadium, by the way?
I don't know. That one was crazy.
I'm still waiting for the Rams-Falcons call to be made final on the punt that hit somebody's leg.
I don't think there's any doubt that River Ron got a talking to. And it wasn't just Jesse James. It was the Kelvin Benjamin play against the Patriots where they overturned that one in the end zone. And it was a ridiculous overturn where you had to slow down frame by frame by frame. And they had two plays tonight where people thought they might be overturned, two huge plays for the Eagles. Right. The catch rule definitely played a role in this game.
You think River Ron got a rap on the knuckles?
I do think so.
I love it.
Like the indisputable evidence part of the rule, I think they went back to that. At least that if it's not totally obvious,
Thank God. Change
what's on the field.
I do love the image of River Ron being sat in a wooden chair like an old Catholic school, and then a rod just rolls in with a ruler.
Whap. Right on the knuckles.
Get better. Whap.
Meanwhile, they like are projecting critical tweets from Mike Pereira on the wall in front of them.
Mikey.
They like make you read
River
those
Ron's
over
a pretty
and
imposing
over.
Guy. I don't know if you're going to wrap him on the knuckles with a little ruler and set him straight.
I love Pereira. He's a Tito's slugging paisan. He loves Tito's. But, you know, when he's coming after the organization, and he used to have River Ron Shop, I wonder if there's a little Pereira-River Ron heat.
No, I'm sure.
Blandino criticized him, too.
Dino Blandino? Well, you know, whatever.
All right.
Dude, Dino
Fair enough.
Dino era's over, bro. Shots at Blandino in a big spot.
A slight digression off the main storyline here.
So Clement, the call stands, and then, Greg, the Patriots go right down the field again. Chris Hogan scores a touchdown, and the third quarter ends.
Yeah, boy.
We'll get to that.
Okay.
We'll get to Hogan because near miss for the Sizzler. 29-26. 29-26. At the end of three quarters, and this is where I will mention, shout out to the Patriots. You know I'm feeling in a good mood tonight over the way things go. But just in general, the one thing I will give the Pats, every Super Bowl they're in is a banger. This is another banger.
That's not a small thing.
Yeah, we're going into the – so as annoying as it is to deal 14-2 every year, and that's not a small thing, and then an easy AFC playoff road.
Yes, it's
and
been
all
very
that.
Difficult for you.
I mean, the
trials and tribulations.
Yeah, you're not going to believe it, Greg. It has been difficult to be a Jets fan during the Patriots dynasty.
I think
it actually is a real thing. These games are always fun when they're in it, and it does – there's a certain added gravitas when Brady's involved in Belichick. I am going to be magnanimous on this one.
Well, tonight, you're not allowed to call yourself magnanimous.
I do it like once every four months.
A lot of human growth happening on this show tonight.
You really got that sense tonight because it was such a heavy Eagles crowd, and you kind of just know that most of the country is rooting against the Patriots, that it does make the game a little more special, that the Patriots come out and they're getting booed. It almost feels like they're villains, that they're these indestructible villains. It adds a little bit to the game that you wouldn't have if it was a different team.
Every single person with Patriots fatigue, which give me a break on that, is going to miss them when they're gone. You're going to miss them when they're gone because they give you instant classics in the Super Bowl every time. They have raised the bar for Super Bowls. We're in the golden age of Super Bowls because of the Patriots.
This is the best run by far, and we lived through some bad ones when we were younger. And the AFC not winning for, 14 straight years and a bunch of terrible blowouts. We've seen some crazy stuff.
There's the difference, though, Wes. As you retired from the Bengals, so you are just a football fan. So the Patriots being involved and you just get all these great games, it makes sense that you're making that statement. But there's somebody that is still invested in another team, especially one in the division. I will not miss the Patriots when they're gone. Get out of my life. In fact, you could look at this game potentially as the beginning of the end, the funeral here in the Viking ship.
It's just weird. Like, your team's been out of the race.
Yeah.
Your team's been out of the race for 2 months. The only thing that makes sense is to root for good football. I don't get that.
This drive.
Endless personal narratives here.
This drive, to put a bow on this one, was a reminder. I think Josh McDaniels had an awesome game because I think there were a lot of throws that, especially on this drive that I'm thinking, that were not tough throws for Tom Brady. I think he played great. He made great decisions. He does so much before the snap. But this wasn't a game where he was required to make a bunch of crazy completions.
He had a bunch of receivers in stride down the field,
but he also had a few drives like this where it was not – he didn't need that much. There was guys wide open in the Eagles secondary.
All right, so the Eagles then make a massive mistake in their next possession in the fourth quarter. They don't score a touchdown. And in this game, that's a fail. Because when they're unable, a drive stalls. Jake Elliott hits a 42-yarder. They extend the lead again to 6 points. But now Tommy Boy's getting the ball down less than a touchdown. And, yeah, what do you think is going to happen? Bang, 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 bang. 10 plays, 75 yards, 447. Capped by that man again, Gronk, who makes a tremendous catch in the back corner of the end zone.
Second and goal to go from the four. They've been running the ball well on this drive.
Here we go. Defense hip-hop music.
Pats,
this is unreal.
Are down 6. 9:26 to go in the fourth.
This is like NBA Jams.
Hogan outside of Dorsett to the
What's
right. Gronkowski slot left inside of Amendola with White to the left of Brady. Amendola in motion left to right. Balls on the left hash. Brady takes the snap. He backs up. A lob toward Gronkowski. Left. Reaches out. Extends. Makes the grab as he dives to the pylon. Touchdown, Patriots! hits as they tie Super Bowl 52.
And big number 87 with a little shimmy with the hips. He's feeling it.
Certainly is. And that was a great Gronk spike. And who knows, maybe the final Gronk spike, because after the game, Gronk said he needs to think about some stuff about his football future. I guess the injuries, and he just suffered a concussion that maybe it makes you think about these things. I'm sure we would probably all agree he probably will be back, but that's another subplot for the Patriots going forward. But Gronk makes a great catch, an epic Gronk spike, and now the Patriots are ahead.
I mean, that drive coming out of the second half is the reason why we know he's not retiring. It's just like that drive against the Steelers to win the game. No one else can do that. He's still on top of his game. He's not walking away. Boy, give me a break.
Yeah, it's the rare offseason where he doesn't have like a 5 or 6 month rehab stint to deal with on top of the season.
And I applaud the Eagles' excitement in terms of the fans. We congratulate, you know, Colleen Wolf and John Gonzalez, two Eagles greats, having a great time out in the city of Minneapolis.
Well, great Eagles
they're
fans.
They're great. They're the MVPs tonight. But can we calm down on playing the Rocky theme and the Rocky stuff on third downs? That was a little bit on my radar. I was like, what game are we at? I saw a lot of other people that aren't fans of the teams tweeting about this, too. It's like, how are they getting the Eagles third down Rocky music?
So let me get this straight. We are not suffering Patriots exhaustion, but we're already tired with the Eagles' success.
I'm just like, this is a neutral site game, and we're showing Rocky on every third down.
Seemed like a Philadelphia home game when you got Rocky playing.
It did feel like a home game.
It was strange.
Well, it did, yeah, the fact there was like 39,000 Eagles fans also played in. But yes. I did enjoy some of Greg, who's, you know, staring down the barrel of 40 now. You had some great old man grumbles during this game. That one was one, and that was fair. Your other one, I'll let you explain it, because I'll give you points on that one as well.
I've got a year and a month till I'm 40, for the record. Well, I would like, and I would just request, you know, the in-stadium entertainment manager to give us 30 seconds of quiet every once in a while to talk to your neighbor. Do we need... I love Cardi B. We don't need Cardi B in between every single play and just whatever other entertainment they have in between every commercial. You couldn't, at no point were they not playing insanely loud things at every second of the game.
Your application has been accepted.
And you know, Scott Hansen of NFL Network, he's a pro.
Right. But he's talking for 2 minutes.
They had like
a
show during the game that was on the loudspeaker, and Hansen's got a booming voice, and then it's like, bang, loud song, bang, sound effect, bang, Rocky clip. It's like
you're calling the Super Bowl a bit gaudy, a bit overproduced.
Love what I'm hearing from Dan and Greg on this issue.
Right, it's like, this is not Tuesday night Wolves versus Bucks. Like, we don't need to generate crowd excitement. It's the Super Bowl.
And while we're here, what's the deal with all this hip-hop music? That's not music. A singer, Frank Sinatra. That's music.
Good luck getting Sinatra at this Super Bowl.
All right.
Or Eddie.
Mark Brady, to our right, shadowy league figure. Can we play some Sinatra? Is that cleared? No. He gave a no.
Hard no.
No Sinatra tonight. All right.
Hard negative.
This is, yes, 33-32. And that's when I said to Greg, it's over. The only way the Eagles win this game is if they manage to pull off what they did on that first drive but finish it out the way they needed to. So they needed to keep their own defense off the field, because their defense had failed for 55 minutes of game time, and the Eagles then have the drive of the history of the franchise, 14 plays, 75 yards, and most importantly, with Tom Brady unconscious and Gronk spiking and swiveling his hips and getting Zolak all fired up, 7 minutes of game time, and it ends, most importantly, with this.
Empty backfield, four receivers right, back goes Foles, fires, slant, touchdown, Zach Ertz!
An embarrassing performance by the Patriots' entire defense, especially their secondary. I believe that was Devin McCourty who got burnt on that play. Pro Football Focus had a tweet at halftime that they had missed more tackles in the first half than any game they've played since 2006, when they started tracking missed tackles. It was just an awfully coached game, I thought. The Patriots were disappointing in their lack of fundamentals all around.
That's why I do want to hear more and more about the Malcolm Butler situation, because whether or not he, whatever he did, you're ticketing him to start this game, and suddenly the other players say after that it was not the plan for him not to be on there. That throws things out of the loop. If suddenly one of us vanished today and wasn't doing the show and wasn't doing their job, it's like it kind of changes the whole afternoon. The biggest compliment I can give the Eagles is that they are so well coached that by the time you get to the end of this season with Nick Foles under center, this drive encapsulated that. They look no different to me than when Carson Wentz was the quarterback.
Yeah.
That's good coaching.
And I don't know if some of it was coaching, certainly. I think Eric Rowe, for instance, ended up playing pretty well. Patrick Chung goes out with an injury in
Eric
the second
Rowe
half.
Eric Rowe did not play well.
I think
well.
He had a really good second half, I do.
Yeah, but the first half matters.
Right.
He got picked on.
I think overall he made plays in – Jeffrey made a couple plays against him, too. But Bademosi and Jordan Richards, and you had certain matchups like Marquise Flowers on Corey Clement and different matchups that the Eagles' offense was able to orchestrate was a great job by the coaches. But to me, it comes down to players. We talk about coaches so much. Those missed tackles are kind of on the Patriots players. And a lot of these plays, as much as the matchup was great, Foles on that drive was so great, and especially that fourth down play, it really stands out to me. I think that it's gotten overlooked just in the immediate aftermath. That took a lot of guts. They went for fourth and two at their own 45 with 5:50 to go.
More onions, more onions.
Maybe
yep.
even more onions than the play on the goal line, if you think about it, because if you don't pick that up, the Patriots have the ball. They're in scoring position, and on that play, Trey Flowers gets immediate pressure. He hits Nick Foles. Foles moved in the pocket very well. He had great pocket
Where
movement
throughout
the game.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. He had it in the NFC Championship game, too, but he slides very subtly, completes a two-yard pass to Ertz, who beats Stephon Gilmore, who had an incredible game overall. And Gilmore, you could tell, was really upset after the play, and I thought about that. That was really a game-changing play, that Ertz wins that matchup, and that Foles kind of makes the play on his own.
Wasn't it a common-sense call by Peterson? As gutsy as it was on the surface, he knew what we all were seeing, that the Eagles, if they punt that ball away, they'd probably never get it back. So they really just had to get that fourth down. It was a had-to-have-it play, and the players played.
And that was their mentality
right.
The whole game. It's super aggression.
And the next play, I think it was the very next play after that, was where Foles is either on a sprint right or he's scrambling to his right, and he throws a gorgeous, like, pee on the move to Aguilar, who taps his toes and gets in before he goes out of bounds. Like, these were high-level plays to win a Super Bowl.
He had three money completions in a row on that drive. And, I mean, he did it all night. And, again, talking to DeFilippo, one thing he said, we just pound fundamentals. We talk about it every single day. And the one thing that they coach well, that when you make a mistake, they quickly find a way with their quarterbacks to get over and just stress their fundamentals. And it sounds cheesy. It just sounds like coach speak, except we're watching Nick Foles do something that we really haven't seen since maybe Joe Flacco had that magical January.
Wes.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, some people believe that Joe Namath sold his soul to the devil to win a Super Bowl, and the Jets are still paying for it. Do you think that Nick Foles sold his soul? Because I know you were not expecting Foles to do it again in this setting, and now he just put together two of the best games in NFL playoff history.
He seems to be a hyper-religious man, like on a Kirk Cousins level, so I would not assume that he sold his soul to the devil.
Yeah, not sure the devil's involved.
But I do think he's about the best example we have yet of the fact that you cannot separate the quarterback from his coaching staff, surrounding talent, and the coaching staff's ability to instill the utmost confidence in a player with their play design, the RPOs, with their play calls, the timing of the play calls. And Nick Foles, we saw so many coaches give up on him. Chip Kelly gave up on him. Jeff Fisher gave up on him. Andy Reid didn't re-sign him with the Chiefs. I mean, there's a lot of coaching staffs that Nick Foles just didn't work well under, and it didn't always have the best talent, especially with the Rams. But on this team, I can't say enough about that coaching staff. And really, I mean, Nick Foles made me eat crow a couple of times now. You got to give him all the credit in the world for how well he's played.
Is the Foles-Wesley family line clash that seemed to be at the heart of all this, is that solved at this point?
Well, I don't know that he's ever going to be my favorite quarterback to watch, and I would suggest buyer beware for any team who thinks he's going to be like a guy to go trade for.
He's under contract for next year.
You're not getting Doug Peterson and John DeFilippo and Frank Reich along with him when you sign him or trade for him.
I was thinking, I saw Carson Wentz in the locker room after the game. He kind of had like a kind of like a weird look in his face, and it made me think like he was kind of – it kind of must be a surreal feeling for him to be the centerpiece of this best team in the NFC, go to the background, and then all of a sudden fast forward to the winning locker room in the Super Bowl, and no one is going to say, ooh, who's starting next year?
Someone did to Alshon Jeffrey, right. Actually, and he was like – Come on, bro.
Yeah. But it I understand it. If he had some like weird thoughts in his head, like this is kind of a bittersweet moment because this I might never get back to this moment with the team. And the other guy did it. The understudy did it. Just, it's kind of a weird spot for him.
Look at that Panthers team from a couple years ago. It shows you how hard it is to get back to these games. Even if you play at the level Wentz did this season, it doesn't mean the team's going to do what
and
they
do. And they're so close, you can tell Foles and Wentz, they really get along. And Foles is, you know, more of a veteran than Wentz. And it still has to be so strange for Wentz because it's not his moment. Some guy was, he was the type of guy who was asking the same question at every player. And
oh,
his question was, how did Carson Wentz's leadership over the last 3 weeks, like, really help out, you know, you win the Super Bowl? And Trey Burton's answer was great. He was kind of like, you know, Nick Foles just had one of the best games ever, man. That's the guy I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Kind of like, he just didn't even want to entertain
and it. Yeah, I hope that writer got his angle.
And it should be said that Ertz's play, he caught the ball, took two or three steps, lunged to the end zone, lost possession of the ball when he reached over the goal line. And especially, you know, poor souls like me are thinking, oh, the Pats are going to get a call here. But the old rap on the knuckles river on said, nope, that's a touchdown. It's not a Jesse James situation. Gene Steratore, who had a nice game, said he had possession. He began to, you know, move upfield. So once he dove, losing possession of the ball, okay, touchdown, no controversy.
I like that with zero evidence that anything has happened at all with Riveron, it's we simply have him in a place where he's like, catch, catch, catch. That's a catch, catch, catch.
That's where it should be.
Everybody gets a catch.
And the last thing, since this is the last time really Foles had the ball meaningfully and was throwing the ball, it is a great reminder of how uncertain all of this is.
And I, what,
it's
life?
It's a point, football. Oh. It's a point we hammer over and over on this podcast. But we had this big discussion, you know, a very vociferous debate when Carson Wentz got injured. And the debate was, can the Eagles possibly win a game or two in the playoffs with Nick Foles? Is that even humanly possible? And, like, for the most part, the idea was, like, no way can Nick Foles, could they even win a game with Nick Foles? And not only that, not only did they win a game or two, they won the Super Bowl in the greatest shootout in NFL history over one of the greatest offenses in NFL history. There's just nothing you can be certain.
It's an argument to completely close shop on analyzing football.
Well,
maybe we pipe down on that.
Shut up.
Predictions. Predictions are tough.
And then.
No more predictions on this show.
38-30. Ooh, speaking of predictions. Lock it up for the old Zeuser.
Well, I have a comment on that because we got a little testy on the other show. Before we get into something where people deciding, because we're tied now at the top.
We are.
Oh, who has it more based on this? Nonsense. This was, you called it. It went your way. We're going to take that trophy. We're going to saw it right down the middle, and I'll put half on your desk, half on mine. That's how you solve this thing.
This is a King Solomon riddle. You want to saw it in half? I got to give it to Zeuser then. He loves the trophy more than you. He wants to keep it intact.
Why aren't we the co-champions? Why don't we just put it on the plate?
That works too. I'm trying to be magnanimous now and say that it was wrong for me to be testy on the other show about the whole thing. It is a parlor game. We have tied. It's how it ends. I'm happy for you and for me.
All right.
And Greg, your attempt to you know, completely scrap the whole thing and try not to win, you almost won. So you have to get better at throwing these kind of contests, please.
I tried to really scrap it with the old double lock. You guys were in on that at the time.
And we look forward to next season when Wes will be with us for the full season, and he could be in it to the very end. So that's settled. Now the biggest defensive play in the history of the Philadelphia Eagles, at least in the Super Bowl era. By the way, did we say that I said it at the very top of the show, this is Super Bowl 52 that we watched today. They never won the Super Bowl before. What a momentous moment for Philadelphia sports. I hope that city is going to be okay because it's going to be crazy.
It's not looking like it so far, but yeah.
So everyone and their brother and their sister thinks Brady's going to take the ball, down five, score the game-winning touchdown. But that is not what happens because the Eagles' defense and specifically that pass rush, which is so praised throughout the season, and rightfully so, and then disappeared for 55 minutes, showed up when it mattered most deep in Patriots territory.
Brady surveys the defense and takes the snap. Tom Stanton, he loads up, he's hit, the ball's out! The ball's out! Philadelphia has it! Barnett comes away with a fumble! Tom Brady was hit from his right!
Sure.
Stunning, stunning, because everyone thought Brady was going to go down the field, and instead, all of a sudden, the Eagles have the ball back, and they are now in the driver's seat for the Super Bowl.
I mean, Eagles fans, Patriots fans, writers, the whole stadium knows that Tom Brady's the two-minute master, that's what he's built his career on, is making a science out of the two-minute drill, and he didn't get a chance to lead it down the field. It threw very little fault of his own. He couldn't have possibly seen Brandon Graham coming on that play.
Yeah, it came pretty quick. He would have, I'm sure he would, you know, wish that he could have reacted a little quicker. He had such great protection all day. That was just a normal four-man rush. And sometimes it comes down to just one play. It's like, okay, you had a bad defensive game, but Brandon Graham beat Shaq Mason on that play. Shaq Mason, maybe the best, you know, guard on the Patriots. Graham rushing from the inside, maybe the best pure pass rusher on the Eagles. He won that play, and that's like, I'm happy for Graham. Just getting to know him very little over the last few weeks, a really likable guy on the team that I think everyone really loves, and for him to have that moment is pretty
special. Well, he was downstairs, and his little baby, or actually like a 3 or 4 year old little cute little girl, was singing her little version of Fly Eagles Fly, and he was trying to answer questions about that play over and over. And what he did pound home was that they sought wherever they could one-on-one matchups, and that's exactly what happened. That is, if we kept getting one-on-one matches, we're going to finally take Brady down at some point. They just never lost faith that it would happen, and it happened at the most critical time in franchise history.
The Eagles stayed aggressive. They ran the ball, made the Patriots use the timeout. Then they threw the ball. Incomplete, kept the Patriots in business with a timeout, another run, and then I think kind of underrated, Jake Elliott, 46-yard field goal, not a gimme in that spot, and it's a difference between a 5-point game and an 8-point game, and he drills it. So Elliott, who had a fantastic rookie year, a guy that came out of nowhere, finishes off his season with a field goal to make it 41-33, and now the Pats have one more chance.
Well, and the Pats end up blowing the kickoff with
that hurt.
A terrible
that
return.
That hurt bad.
And you mentioned how big that kick was by Elliott. The Patriots would have had the ball with 1:10 left at the 35. Instead, they have the ball at the 9 with 58 seconds left. And that's why, even though the Eagles deserve credit for getting pressure on Brady, once you're at that point, I mean, that is an almost impossible situation with no timeouts. And one of the reasons they didn't have a timeout, they wasted a timeout early in the fourth quarter on a third down play where the clock was stopped. And that was another kind of un-Belichick, un-Patriots-like mistake.
And the play, Wes, you called it when it happened. But Brady's just like, give me the ball. Let's get on the 25-yard line, give me the ball. Instead, they try to get cute with a trick play, and not only does it get brought down at the 9, it costs you about, 8-10 seconds.
I think that's something I picked up from Romo at one point this year. He said, ask any veteran quarterback, and they'll say, don't do anything tricky on the kickoff. Don't dance around. Just give me the ball at the 25 and let me take it from there. Don't get me stuck with my back against the end zone.
So Brady gets into a fourth and long situation, completes a pass, gets the ball up around midfield, but now he has no timeouts and the clock's against him. 9 seconds to play. He evades pressure. And let's hear the call one more time. This is from the team Zolak, WEEI, the final play of Super Bowl 52.
Tom takes the snap. He's pressured. He moves up. He slips the rush. He steps to his right. He loads up. He throws deep downfield. Gronk is there at the goal line. Ball is up in the air. Batted around. And it's incomplete. And the Philadelphia Eagles, for the first time in their history, are Super Bowl champions.
Uh-oh.
What is this place?
They call it the New England.
Why are the inhabitants so pleased with themselves?
They are known as the people of the Zolak. Their loutish behavior is indigenous to the region.
I see. I command you to destroy them all.
As you wish, Lord. Lord?
Yes.
How about them apples?
I don't get your ref.
Goodwill Hunting?
Oh, okay. Yup. Ha ha, ha ha. Ha ha. Now destroy them.
As you wish, Lord.
No! No! No!
I love Tom Brady.
That's what you said.
I love Tom Brady.
Speaking of being pleased with yourself,
he held it for as long as he could.
Had that one in the chamber and got to use it. What a beautiful Super Bowl Sunday it is.
Recorded it thinking, probably won't be using this. We didn't know.
I missed the Super Bowl post-Super Bowl shows where we didn't have drops. I think it was good, just the four of us talking.
Those days are gone, my friend. So there you go. The Eagles are the Super Bowl champions. I went on the field after the game, and just as luck would have it, I ran into a good friend of ours, Colleen Wolfe, with tears in her eyes, emotional, gave her a hug, and then I asked her if I could, you know, ask her a couple questions.
I'm here on the field with a teary-eyed Colleen Wolfe. The Eagles are Super Bowl champions. Your thoughts?
This is embarrassing, and I don't know what to say, but I just did a snow angel or a confetti angel on the field. And, oh, my God, as soon as they win, I just busted out ugly crying, and I don't even know what to do with myself right now.
Where does this rank in the pantheon of sports moments for Colleen Wolfe?
Number one. Like, not even a question. This is the best. This is the best day ever. It never happens, ever.
Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
I would normally say go Eagles, but they won. This is crazy. I don't even know what to do.
That was a really nice moment with Connie. And then I'm walking off the field. Andrew Howard, who works on the third floor, another good guy and Eagles fan, just standing with tears in his eyes.
It's been that long for that team, that fan base. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And Eagles fans, some Eagles fans maybe aren't sweethearts, but the ones that we know, especially in our company, good people that never got this moment, so you could see how it affects them.
There is John Gonzalez tweeted out because he was at the game with Colleen.
Who?
The whole rigmarole.
Yeah.
We don't have the sound clip.
No, we don't need it.
Yes. Yeah. So their friend, though, Kristen
John
Sugden.
John Gonzalez, born March 12, 1977, is an American sports writer, who's married to NFL media broadcaster
talking.
Colleen Wolfe. John, who's a Pisces, resides in Los Angeles with his wife and two dogs.
Sugden, their friend, one of Colleen's friends from Philadelphia, he tweeted out this video, and I'm sure she couldn't be anything more than pleased that it's out there, but she just breaks down in tears uncontrollably. It's like when you see someone who hasn't seen their veteran husband or wife come back from, like, Afghanistan after 4 years. I mean, she utterly lost it. And it's like, I totally get it. We were talking about this downstairs, Dan. As Jets and Browns fans or any fan of any team that's never been there, you cannot imagine the feeling.
No, I can't. And I said that to Colleen. It would be amazing to just have this feeling. So I was happy for her. But it makes you think, hey, if it happens to the Eagles, maybe the Browns one day.
Why? Of course.
Why not?
Why not? And that moment, listening to Colleen, was one of the best moments I think we've ever had in the history of this podcast. And it's one reason, as a Patriots fan, we've had it pretty good. And I think this loss will get more annoying, I'm sure, personally, after I leave and see it during the week and think about it. But Patriots have had enough. You know, I'd rather them have made it to their 8th Super Bowl and lose this one than not have made this game. And they got beat by a better team tonight, and the Eagles fans deserve it, and this Eagles team deserved it, and they get their moment.
I think the peak of sports and the peak of fandom is when they generate unbridled joy. And the Patriots weren't generating unbridled joy like to the extent that the Eagles winning their first Lombardi trophy would.
All right, boys, before we check in with our props, a quick word from our sponsor. Oh, yeah, it's almost just for men's season. You know that, guys. I'm going to do a little experiment, and it's going to be an innovative shampoo that I try. At least I hope it is. GX. Control GX, the first gray-reducing shampoo from Just for Men. Just for Men helps men look their best so they can celebrate who they are, what they achieve, and how they feel. Just use as you would your regular shampoo until you like what you see. Subtle, natural. This is ridiculous. Natural-looking results. Shampoo in, rinse out, and move on. It's that easy. Most guys get it's almost 2 in the morning.
Well,
talking about the shampoo I'm going to use.
For John, please.
You're excited about it.
Most guys get the results they want in about 2 weeks, and I'll find out soon enough. Anyway, yeah, you know everybody's excited about it. It's the Control GX. Get 25% off using the code AROUND at controlgx.com. That's the code AROUND to get 25% off Control GX at controlgx.com.
That was an example of genuine method acting. I not only believe that you believe the message, I think it's, you know,
and our listeners will come through. They'll just spend lots of money to help out us and our sponsors.
Men, just for men. It's not, women do not have to buy that product, according to
Unless they buy it for their men.
Well, that's true.
Unfortunately, based on at least the attendance at our, you know, meetup, we could use a few more lady listeners out there. I think it was all men there.
The only females were there, and we've seen this other meetups, are the wives and girlfriends that are unmercifully dragged to the event and don't want to be there at all.
We want to hear from our
I think we had one who was there of her own volition. Mm.
What a sweet woman she is. All right, let's go over the props. We'll start with Chris Wessling. First, you went 4-4 for the game. Patriots score a first quarter touchdown. No. Once again, they've been in 8 Super Bowls now, 5 wins, 3 defeats. They have never scored a touchdown in the first quarter. To me, it's just...
cost them, especially in this game where you needed to...
I flew too close to the sun. I should have just went with they'll break their streak of not scoring at all in the first quarter, but I didn't think I could reel you guys in.
No one would have taken that.
It's a delicate balance.
And I think it's just another example of bad coaching in New England, and maybe it's time for a change.
Let's freshen things up in New England, please.
Also, you had your Al Michaels or Chris Collinsworth will use the word goat when referencing Tom Brady. I didn't get any tweets other than jokey ones, and it didn't matter anyway because no one took you up on it.
Right. That was just a complete and utter dud.
Chris, all right. This one's from Mark Sessler, who went 4-8.
Ouch.
Chris Hogan has 160-plus receiving yards. This one cost you 4 sandwiches, and you know what? He came close. At the halfway point, he had over 80 yards. I think he was about 130 in the third quarter, and then he had a drop, a costly drop, on the Patriots' last drive that probably would have put him right on the cusp or over, but it didn't work out.
Tough loss. I think that, you know, I'll live with it.
It was a pretty good instinct because he only had 24 yards combined in the previous 2 games. And if you had just said, you know, 120, we probably would have all taken
Ultimately,
that,
I so. Lost 4 sandwiches. Yeah. So and absolutely incorrect
the Brandon,
production.
And it was unfortunate. The Brandon Cooks injury, I think, made Hogan an even bigger part of the game. It didn't work out. Here is your other prop. A play in Super Bowl 52 receives a nickname and tops the helmet catch.
No, that didn't happen.
Didn't happen. Cost you 4 more sandwiches.
How about the fumble?
A little reckless.
The fumble.
The Brady fumble.
Is that an Ernest Biner play?
Yeah, that's been used. I think I lost that too.
How about Philly special? The 4th-and-1 catch by Nick Foles. I don't think that counts.
That's not getting
over the
tirade.
But that's the top of the helmet check.
That's nowhere close.
Greg Rosenthal, a 6-4 record. Nice job by Greg. Because you got Nick Foles throws for over 300 yards.
Okay.
In fact, this was the only one anyone got right.
Wow, we're terrible.
Dan,
we are awful.
Mark,
about those predictions.
Dan, Mark, and Wes all took you on that.
I believed in you, Nick Foles.
And I did.
That's true.
And if you just would have had a more like logical second one, maybe you would have cleaned up. But you had Doug Peterson will fail on a terrible challenge, and that cost you 4 sandwiches.
You believed in him too, huh?
That was the donation.
You really spit the bit on that one.
The old Zeuser went 5-6. Tom Brady wins Super Bowl MVP. You got the field.
Close.
Only Patrick took me on that, he gets a sandwich there.
I mean, he did throw for 500 yards.
I mean, you know Dan's living well when he doesn't even lose sandwiches on that.
And Zach Ertz and Nelson Aguilar combined for at least 160 yards. I believe it was very close. I think it was in the range of 150, but I fell short. But you know what? I'm going to live with it because the Patriots lost the Super Bowl today. Not going to get too greedy. And finally, the big winner.
151 yards.
Oh.
Very close.
The big winner, Kevin Patra, finishes 6-2. Deion Lewis will have more rushing yards than LeGarrette Blount and Jay Ajayi. He lost 2 sandwiches there. And then Dan Hansis will not break news post-game. I don't think I broke news as the lights go out at U.S. Bank Stadium. It's time for us to go. But I did get that exclusive with Connie Fox. But an exclusive is not the same as breaking news.
I don't think anyone outside of this podcast is going to count that as news.
Well, I lost a sandwich here, so I'm in the business of trying to get you back into the conversation that you did break news somehow. Get something going here for me, please.
Yeah, he does a great job, Nick Fortier. He has this one still open, so maybe he's waiting to see how we come down on it. So there you go. That's it. Another season, gentlemen, is in the books, if you could believe it. I think this is our 5th Super Bowl show, the night of the Super Bowl. It's an honor working with you boys.
Isn't it a tradition that we do one big takeaway from the Super Bowl?
Before you guys do one big takeaway, I have a presentation of sorts.
Okay. What do you got?
So while I get this, hang on 1 second. You guys went over your locks, and we discussed before we left for the Super Bowl a potential trophy from the listeners that's going to be waiting for us in California, which it is.
Right.
But before we get that, we have one that I had specially made just for the winner, along with the proper engraving plate. So let me get it for you guys.
Wow. What is Lindsay Fulton's got something cooking.
Did you bring the saw for Mark to saw it in half?
No, we resolved that one peacefully, as everyone is now aware. Lindsay now crawling under a table, keeps her balance. Very impressive work. But now she's throwing a chair. A box is being opened, and out comes...
Look at this.
Oh, a gorgeous
Whoa. Oh, wow. Around we can't the NFL. No.
Lock. They, just is, they gave it the mark.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Okay. It's a and for the listeners, it is a gorgeous trophy. Mark, I'll let you hold on to it for now.
This is beautiful.
And maybe we'll take a photo with it. But a lock trophy that celebrates our first ever full season. Not the most successful season. In terms of success, but it was fun, as it always is on this podcast. So
might be feeling differently about that tie thing. This looks very good here with my name engraved on it.
It looks sexy.
That's one of the better-looking trophies I've seen.
It's really nice job, Lindsay, and whoever else was part of that. Thank you.
So there you go. All right. I don't know. Do we have time? Why don't we save our takeaways, Wes?
Let me just throw in one real quick. Here's what I've learned. The Patriots have taught us in their 8 Super Bowl appearances. Same thing the Eagles taught us this year. NFL comes down to a few key plays in almost every single game. The key is to get there. The Eagles could have lost in the opening round of the playoffs against, or in the second round on Julio Jones's play.
Yep.
Legacies in New England are defined by a few plays in all of these games. The important thing is to get there 8 times, and that's how you build your legacy. Mm. But this is another one that came down to just a few plays, and that's how you win in the NFL.
That's how they got the bye. I mean, that's why Carson Wentz is such a big part of it. I mean, they put themselves in position. I don't know if Nick Foles is going to win 3 games on the road in the playoffs, but he won these 2, and then he just scorched the Patriots.
Just get there. Who knows what will happen?
All right. Greg still has not processed what happened today. I'm looking forward to your tape study when it really sets in.
I'm definitely not doing any tape study of this.
We are now going to go back and have one, maybe a couple more drinks of Fridays if they'll have us. And then we're going to get on a plane and get out of town. It's been great. All the people that we met, the listeners here in Minneapolis, great people, friendly people, Mark. Minnesota nice even.
Yeah, I was mocked for suggesting that on the last show, and I'm sticking to it. I think they're mostly very kind from what
we
I can see.
We all agree with you on that.
No,
I was openly mocked.
It was a bit of a showy moment by you.
It was, and it didn't exactly, it seemed a little bit fake on my part, so you're right.
But no, everyone was really nice here, and we enjoyed it a lot and enjoyed the stadium. This is a great facility. But that's it. That's the 2017 season, if you'd believe it. Another one in the books for the Around the NFL podcast. So, until... later this week, when we mark the off season begins. Now it's you in Mexico with your legs up, and the big old daiquiri.
And it's
coming.
We're officially past midway of the season. Would you agree?
Okay, yeah,
Mark?
I think we've crossed that midway threshold at this point.
All right, let's get out of here. We've done enough time here at the U.S. Bank Stadium, and that's it. Dan Hansa signing off for the Quiet Storm, co-champion of the Lock Trophy, the mailman, the old boss. Lindsay Fulton, Loose Cannon, behind the glass, till Thursday.